Okay, going back to the Mishnah, we're going to start on Kufyu Gimel, about 8 lines from the bottom. Hei Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgida. Okay, it says Hei Rabbi Yochanan and 3 dots. So in the Mishnah, just to go back for a minute, on Kufyu Bet Amabet, there were 2 statements here. The first one on the 6th line of the Mishnah says Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri wants to know why is the woman who is deaf gets a get, but the man who is deaf can't give a get. So what's the difference? So they explain, the rabbis answer him, and they say, there's a difference between because a woman can go, you can get divorced against her will, and a man can't. We discussed this yesterday, how a woman, a man can divorce a woman against her will according to the Torah, and even according to the rabbinic law, and it's only from the Takana of Rabbeinu Gershom that a woman, one of the things he instituted was that a woman can only get divorced willingly. Okay? And so now what happens? So if there's a chereshet whose father marries her off, presumably when she's a ketana, the Mefarshim say, that's what Rashi says, and he basically accepted the kiddushin on her behalf, because he can do that for a ketana. So if he were to do that, then we say, shehi yotza beget. Okay, so then they say, this is the same issue, that a woman can go without a get because she doesn't, the get doesn't need her approval. So now the Gemara says, Amarava, me'edutosha Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgida. Now this is not, he says, from here we can infer another situation. It's, the Mefarshim talk about this, not exactly clear that you would necessarily learn it from his testimony or from his words. It would be more the whole concept of the fact that a get can be given to a woman against her will, right? That she doesn't even, whether she wants it or not, the get can be given to her. He says we can learn about a case like this. So what's interesting, by the way, about all these cases is none of this would anymore be relevant, because nowadays that a woman, based on Takanat Rabbeinu Gershom, the woman has to accept to get willingly, so none of these halachot really, or you'd have to figure out how relevant they are. Amar le'edim, re'uz get zesh ani noten. He goes over to witnesses and he said, here's a get that I'm about to give to my wife. And then he goes to the woman, va'amar la, kinsi shtar chov zeh. You ever get to a situation where you're supposed to sign documents and you just kind of sign and you don't really know exactly what you're signing, and they just say, oh, this is what you're signing? So here, obviously, she doesn't need to sign the get, but the point is, he says, here's a document of an IOU, basically. And he doesn't say, here's your get. Okay, so she doesn't really read the words and know what it is. So the question is, can she get divorced with this document? He told the Aidim, we have Aidim that say that this is a get. And we can obviously look at the words and say it's a get, but the question is, when he gives it to her, she doesn't know that it's a get. She thinks that it's just a document of an IOU. So what do we say? Obviously, based on Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgida, that if she doesn't even need to get divorced willingly, well, then obviously, he gave her the get, it's a get. Harezo megureshet. But now, there's a bit of an issue here. So let's see. Milo amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgida lo be'inan da'ata. This is just a continuation of explaining it. Just like Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgida said, we don't need her knowledge and her willingness. Hachanami lo b'inan data. Here also, we shouldn't need her approval. So then they say, pshita. What do you mean? This is obvious. Why do you even need to tell us this, right? No chiddush here. Obviously, if he gives her the get, he gave her the get. So now we get into all sorts of, which I find very interesting, issues in these kind of things, which is, and also by Dine Momonot and Shtarot, and when you give someone, What were his intent? In other words, here, you get a little bit, yes, it's true, he said to Adim, this is what I want, right? This is a get. But then between the time he gave it to the witnesses and said, this is a get, then he goes to the wife and he says, this is an IOU document. Mm-hmm. Now maybe, ma'u detema, well, maybe we should say, mida amar la kin si shtar chov zeh bitule batle kamash malan. Maybe when he gave it to her, he was basically saying, oh yeah, I'm not really planning to give you a get. This is just a shtar chov, an IOU. So basically, the question is, what was his intent? Okay? So in the end, they say no, since in the end he gave her a get, and since in the end we don't really need her haskama to the get, so we basically say we're at the bottom of Kufyu Gimel Amabet. So we basically say that you can't assume that when he gave her the get and he said, here's an IOU, that he intended with that document to say, I'm not really giving you the get, okay, and to cancel it. No, the fact is he gave her a get, and since we don't need her agreement, it's considered a get. Iita debatlil right, so I didn't read the end. Kamashmalan, what does it come to teach you? And the whole question was, isn't this obvious? So they say, no, it comes to teach you that iita debatlil edim have a ka'amra lehu. If he really meant to cancel it, sorry, to debatle, le'edim have a ka'amar lehu. Since he said to the edim, here's a get, and then he goes and gives it to his wife. So the point is, if he really meant to cancel it, he would have said to the edim, I'm canceling the get. Umidelo amar le'edim, le'batle ve'lo midi. We have to assume that since he didn't say anything to the edim, we have to assume that he really never meant to cancel it. When he said, so now you have to explain, well then, why did he say to his wife, instead of, here's your get, he said, this is a shtarchov, this is an IOU. So why did he say that? Mahmat kisufu hudaka amar. He was embarrassed. Okay? What exactly this embarrassment is, I'm not 100% sure. Why he was embarrassed in front of his wife to say, here's your get. Maybe he didn't want to embarrass her, saying, here's your get, like I want to get rid of you, right? It's a little embarrassing to have to give your wife the get, right? So unclear exactly who the embarrassment is for, but anyway, this is what you generally do when you have a case and you want to try to figure out what was his intent, right? And how do we figure out? So they try to kind of figure out, okay, well then if he did this, he must have done it, right? The fact that he didn't go to the edim, and then you have to explain, well then why did he say that to his wife, which doesn't really make sense, right? He should have just said to get. So if they can come up with some answer, then, okay, it works. This happens a lot in Dine Mamonot, like, and also in Dine Gitim. When we'll get to Gitim, we're going to see all these cases where they canceled the get or they didn't, and what was his intent. If he's running after the shaliach, does that mean, I'm actually teaching the sugya this week, and I'm teaching a Gitim class to girls, he gives a get, and then he runs after the shaliach. He doesn't reach the shaliach, but the shaliach sees him running after him. So one guy says, that's what we call giloy dat beget. In other words, it's obvious that he's trying to cancel the get. Why else would he be running after the shaliach? And we could say the giloy dat beget is good. And the guy who thinks the giloy dat beget isn't good, that you actually have to say the words, I'm canceling the get. It's not enough to just reveal your thoughts. He says, oh no, maybe the shaliach thought he was running after him and say, go, 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 go. Yeah. So it's, right, it's tricky how to know what your intents are. Okay. And obviously, like everything, right, it's not clear cut. This one, they say very definitively, but, you know, you could see that it's not 100% clear cut. Okay, now we're going to get into, we're going to start Kuf Yud Daled now. Kuf Yud Daled, the joke is, it's called the kid daf. Okay, it's all about kids and chinuch, and it's very interesting. We're going to get into some really interesting situations, not having to do with get, actually. If you remember, we had this issue of, do you have to stop a katan from doing an avera? So now we're going to get into that sugya. If a katan's doing an avera, the sugya was, does the Beit Din have to intervene and stop the kid from doing an avera or not? Okay? So now we have a case here. And we're going to take it a little farther than even stopping them, maybe encouraging them sometimes to do an avera when it's necessary. Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Bisna, Irkesule Maftachai. To Beit Midrasha, b'Rishut HaRabim b'Shabbat. Okay, he lost the keys to the Beit Midrash in the Rishut HaRabim on Shabbat. So now it's Shabbat. They need to get into the Beit Midrash. They don't have the keys. The keys are lost somewhere in Rishut HaRabim. If they do find the keys, no one can carry them because it's in Rishut HaRabim, and no one can bring them to the Beit Midrash. Huge problem. Atal Kamed Rabbi Pedat. They go to Rabbi Pedat. They say, "What should we do?" Amar Le Zil DeBartali V'Talia. Vilitailu hatam. This sounds like a whole play on words, right? Bring over what Tali and Talia means are young children. Okay, there's another place where they're more like bar bat mitzvah age, even up to age 16. But here it's clear we're talking about she'enam chayavim b'mitzvot. Bring over these little children. Vilitailu hatam, and they should play there in Rishut HaRabim near where you think you lost the keys. Vilitailu hatam. De'im mishkache lehu, that if you were to find the keys, ma'ite lehu, they'll bring them to you. Okay, so basically they have this situation, the keys are lost in Rishut HaRabim on Shabbat. Rabbi Pedat says, go bring the children, they'll play. If they were to find the keys, then they'll bring them to you. Okay, so kind of right, who's ever been in a situation where you have a big problem on Shabbat, there's no non-Jew, right? You try to see maybe a katan, maybe they'll kind of figure out what you need and without you really telling them what to do. Okay, here it's really interesting that the rabbi even says, right, it's not that the kids are playing it. He says, go bring the kids, create a situation where the kids will do your Chilul Shabbat for you, right? Very interesting.
Wait, what's the connection to the previous?
So it's connected because we brought up this Katan Ochel Nevelot in the context of if the Chereshet gets divorced, right? So we said that she, if she were to do, it was if she were to do chalitza. What did we say that if she were, she's not allowed to do chalitza. I think it was in the chalitza context. And if she were to do chalitza, so why don't we just let her? In other words, so what? She's like a katan ochel nevelot. She doesn't really understand that she's doing something she's not allowed to do. Let her do it, and that will resolve her issue, that she can go marry someone else, right? And it was one of those situations where, where we were stuck. And they said, why don't you just let her, I forget exactly where it came up, but why don't you just let her do it, and it'll be like katan ochel nevelot, and when a kid does something wrong, we just leave it, right? We don't stop him. So now they say, so what do you see here from this story? Alma kasavar katan ochel nevelot ein beitim mitzuvin lahafrisho. Right? It seems to imply here that if a katan is doing an avera, we're not, right here, it's even more than that, right? It's almost like if we need them, we can put them in that situation. Which, by the way, we don't really paskin by, right? We don't generally allow children to do malacha for us on Shabbat. Okay? Okay, so now we're going to see a whole diyun. I'm going to stop here for a minute and just give you a little rundown. The mafreshim all go crazy here. Like, what do you mean? We have din chinuch of children. How could you say that, right, we're going to encourage children to do averot when we have a din of chinuch? So there's a few different options given to explain. One is to say that the mitzvah of chinuch is on the father and not on the beit din. If you notice the lashon here, ein beit din mitzuvin lafrisho, but your father or mother, for all intents and purposes, would be forbidden. In other words, it's a command only on the parent. And therefore, this would be true if you say, give, take that explanation, then you would say that the Beit Din isn't mitzvah lafrisho, but the father would be. Okay? A father can't put his kid into this situation. Another option is, this is a really interesting one, I mean, you know, something to think about, the chinuch is only for mitzvot aseh, and not for mitzvot lo taseh. Which I think is a weird, right, to say that. So the gisha there says basically that it's much harder to learn how to do a mitzvot aseh than it is to not do a mitzvot lo taseh. I don't exactly agree with that because I think, you know, let's take Shabbos for example. If kids grow up being mechal Shabbos and then all of a sudden they're 13, they can't be mechal Shabbos, very hard to get used to that, right? So it's an interesting one, but okay, right? If the strength for that argument is that a lot of the mitzvot of chinuch say, like a katan hayodeh lenanea is chayav to do nitilat lulav, and a katan who does this is chayav to do this. And the context of chinuch really does express itself a lot in the mitzvot aseh. The third answer, which is the most, I think the most convincing, which is, one second, I'll lose me for the 1 second, I have to just remind myself, right. The obvious one, I think, is that there's a difference between a katan shigia legil mitzvot and a katan shelo higia legil mitzvot. And I think most people make this distinction in their house a little bit. That when, if a katan has no understanding of what it is to be mechalel Shabbat, then, you know, there's not much din of chinuch there. Right? It's only, you know, so you would distinguish between, you know, it depends on the age, it depends on the issue, but, you know, maybe a 2, 3, 4-year-old, you know, and then a 5 and up or something like that, right? Depending on the issue, but that there would be that distinction. So the kids that they brought here were the really little kids that could bring the key, as opposed to the older kids who have a din chinuch on them. So that's, I think, a more obvious answer. Okay, we're now going to have, if you look at the sheet, I mapped it out, we're going to have a long diyun of slew of braitot that are going to either strengthen Rabbi Padat's opinion or go against Rabbi Padat's opinion. So what we're seeing here is he's not the only opinion, okay? And there's different opinions about, you know, there's different sources that seem to include one or the other. And every single one of them, we're going to knock down. We're going to say that each of these braito can be explained in both ways, okay? So let's start. Lema Misayele, why don't we say that this provides a support for him? Lo yomar adam latino, haveli mafteach, haveli chotam. Okay, you can't tell a kid, go bring me a key, a stamp, okay, that's in Rashid Arabim. Ela minicho tolesh minicho zorek. In other words, if he, leave him alone, and if he does it, he does it. If he doesn't do it, he doesn't do it. Okay, so what do you see here? If the kid, you can't tell him directly to do it, but if he were to do it, no problem. So here it shows his opinion, exactly that, right? You don't have to stop him. Amar Abaye, no, you can explain this source differently. You could explain that what are we talking about, tolesh, right? Tolesh means to pull something off a tree. Tolesh, ba'atzit she'eno nakuv, he was pulling it off a tree that didn't have holes, right, like a plant. It was a plant that didn't have holes in it, meaning it wasn't in the ground, it was in a pot, flower pot, and that is only Asher Midrabanan to do tolesh on something like that. Zorek b'karmelit derabanan. In other words, you could say that he was throwing not in Rashid Arabim, he was throwing in a karmelit. A karmelit is only asur midrabanan. It's like a big area that's not a Rashid Arabim, but also not a Rashid Yachid. It's in between. They call it, they say it's like a Rashid Arabim midrabanan. Okay. So Abaye says, only in Isurei derabanan you can explain it, but not in Isurei d'oraita. Okay, that's another distinction to possibly make here, right? That when it's Isra d'oraita, you wouldn't allow them, but when it's Isra d'rabbanan, maybe you'd be meka. Tashma. Ovei kochavim. Okay, here we're going to bring a source that's going to be against Rabbi Pita. Ovei kochavim shabal chabot. Okay, we learned this source in Shabbat. If an ovei kochavim goes to put out a fire, ein omrim lo kabeh ve'al tichbeh, you can't tell him, go put it out, because you're telling, that's amira la'akum, right? You're not allowed to tell a non-Jew to do malacha for you on Shabbat. You also don't need to tell him, al tichbe, don't put it out. Okay? If he's doing it, you don't have to say, oh, don't do that. No, I can't do malacha on Shabbos. Why? Mipnei she'ein shvitato alehem. It's not your responsibility that he be shoved on Shabbat, right? And if he wants to do it, he can do it. Katan, here's our issue now. Katan haba lechabot, if a katan goes to put out the fire, omrim lo al tichbe, you have to stop him. Sheshvitato alehem. Okay, so now what do you see here? You have to stop a kid from doing malacha. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, no, we can explain the source also. We can say that this source is ba'oseh al da'at aviv. So here we have a third category, okay? We have one option that says you can't tell him what to do. You know, you don't have to stop him. The other option that says you have to stop him. And here's a middle position that says it depends on the situation. If the father's standing right there and watching him, we all know, right? Kids look to parents for approval. So if the kid's doing it and the father's standing right there and the father knows he's doing it and kind of nods his approval or doesn't say, right? And then it's as if he's doing it because his father says it's okay and then it's really doing it for his father's sake, okay? That's not allowed. And that's the fire situation. Whereas if he just does it and the father's not necessarily standing by watching him and approving, then it would be okay, right? You wouldn't have to stop him. So then they say, wait, if it's osel da'at aviv, so remember, we have a whole bright here. It started with the Ovei Kochavim, then it went to the Katan. So then you'd have to say the Ovei Kochavim was in the same situation. So, tikavatek Ovei Kochavim, do'osel da'at Yisrael mishare. So if an Ovei Kochavim is doing it with the owner standing right there, right? The Jew standing right there, and the Jew is approving, that's mutar. Okay, by the way, this is how, right? Shabbos goy. Right. It's exactly what a Shabbos goy does, right? They're saying, how can we allow a Shabbos goy to do something for you when it's clear that they're doing it with your intent and for your purposes? And so they say, it is okay. Why? Okay. Ovei kochavim adata dinafshe avid. He's his own person, right? There's a difference between a katan. A katan relies on the dad of his father, right? That's why kids always look to their parents for approval, right? They don't feel confident in their own. They don't have their own dad. Here, they're saying the Ovei Kochavim is doing it for his own sake. Now, what's his own sake? So either he works for you and he wants to be, you know, have approval by you, or sometimes Shabbos goys, by the way, people pay them. Okay? There's certain communities where the Shabbos goy gets paid.
Right, right.
Okay? So, you know, he's doing it so he can make money. So then that's okay. And either which way, he's doing it out of the goodness of his heart, right? It's all on his dot. Tashma. Ben chavir sheragil lelech etzal avimo. Okay, here's another source. Okay, so that source was inconclusive about whether you could or whether you couldn't, because you could say it's osel da'at aviv, in which case it's a different situation. Okay, now we're going to bring, that was a potential koshi on Rabbi Pita, and then we answered. Now we're going to bring a support. A ben chaver, what's a chaver in an Am Haaretz? A chaver is someone who's trustworthy when it comes to Truman and Maasrot. In Am Haaretz is someone who's not necessarily trustworthy. We don't know if they were mafresh Truman and Maasrot or not. And they're Truman and Maasrot, okay? If something for sure hasn't been, you haven't taken Truman and Maasrot, it's called Tevel. If we don't know, it's called Demai, because Da-Mai. We don't know what it is. Like, go figure out what it is. It's called Demai, it's Suffolk. Okay, so now, what's the case? The son of a chaver, Sheragil Elech Etzal Avi Imo. Okay, his maternal grandfather, he goes to his house a lot, and he happens to be an Am Haaretz. This is a great line, right? Ein choshashim shema yachilenu dvarim she'enam mitukanim. You don't have to worry that he's going to eat things that aren't Truman and Maasrot. You don't have to tell him, don't eat the fruits and vegetables at grandpa's house because he might not have taken Truman and Maasrot. Matzabi ado, let's say he leaves the grandfather's house and the grandfather gave him some food to take home. Matzabi ado perot ein zakuklo. He doesn't have to say, don't eat them. Okay? Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So again, this seems to imply we don't have to stop him, just like Rabbi Pedat said. So now they say, no, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, b'demai hi kilu. It's a special din about demai. Okay, it's not necessarily the case all the time. It's just demai because demai is only suffix, and it could be he really was mafresh. Ella, so now the Gemara asks a question on this. Ella tama de demai ha vadai baili sure. But according to this, what does it seem to imply? If it was tevel, where it's vadai, you would have to be maser them, right? And then we have a problem because v'ha amar Rabbi Yochanan be'oseh al da'at aviv. Didn't Rabbi Yochanan say that when you do it al da'at aviv, that's when we have to be mafresh you, right? But if it's not al da'at aviv, Rabbi Yochanan himself said, you understand? Rabbi Yochanan was the one who said, oh, it's a special din by demai, which would mean that if it was vadai, it would be mutar, right? I'm sorry, it would be asur, right? You would have to say if the kid goes to the grandfather's house and you know for a fact that the grandfather isn't mafresh truma to monstro, it would be asur for the kid to eat, according to that. But Rabbi Yochanan himself said it's only asur when you do it al da'at aviv. And here he's not doing it al da'at aviv because his father's not there. So now, what do they answer? Ela Rabbi Yochanan, sipuke misapkale. It's not that Rabbi Yochanan knew for sure that this category of osel al da'at aviv is the case. But I'm going to say this in very simple words. He was playing devil's advocate. In other words, each time they brought a source, he'd say, but you could see it the other way. You could see it the other way. Okay? He didn't really know what the answer was. But he just, every time a source comes, says he can't prove it.
Well, maybe a grandfather is like a father. Can we extend to that saying?
No, because al da'at aviv wouldn't mean here his grandfather doesn't know he's doing something wrong or he doesn't care that he's doing something wrong. The whole issue is, right, the person who knows. Tashma, ben chaver kohen shorgil elech etzel aviimo, kohen ama'aretz. Okay, again, we have the case, he goes to his grandfather's ama'aretz, but here it happens to be he's a kohen. The kid's a kohen and the maternal grandfather's a kohen, right, which isn't necessarily the case because they're not, right?
Yeah.
It happens to be his mother's a kohen, family, and the father also. Ein choshashim shema yachilenu truma temea. Okay, we don't have to worry that he's going to give you truma temea because the assumption is, right, the food in his house is truma because he's a kohen, but he might not treat it properly because he's an ama'aretz. Right, they're also not makpid on tuma and tara properly. Matzabi ado perot en zakuklo, same thing, right? So again, what do you see? You don't have to stop him. Again, proof for Rabbi Pedat. What do they answer now, though? But truma derabanan, you could say that they're all. It's only time about truma derabanan and not truma doraita. In which case, that's the same distinction we made in the first case, where Rabbi said that's derabanan, that's doraita. Okay, you're going to find this one very strange. Tashma yonek tinok veholech. If a child nurses from a non-Jewish woman or from a behemat me'ah, okay, a non-kosher animal, right, yeah, I tell you, you weren't going to like this one. I had to read this a few times to make sure this is really what it was talking about, okay? You don't have to worry that, oh, this kid is getting sustenance from a sheketz, right, from something disgusting, despicable. Okay, but you can't feed him non-kosher food, okay? But if he were to be yonek from an Ovedek HaChavim, Behemet Tameh, it would be allowed. Umikulan yonek mehen, vafilu b'Shabbat, even on Shabbat. Okay, what's the issue on Shabbat? Nursing is a tolada of the malacha of dash. Okay, what is dash? Dash is threshing. It's where they would separate the peel. They would take the kernel of wheat outside of the klipa, of the covering of it. So nursing is considered the same kind of thing as is squeezing lemon to make lemon juice. Okay, if you want to squeeze orange juice on Shabbat, okay, there's ways you could do it. If you squeeze it onto a solid, it's okay. But if you would squeeze it into a cup, you want to squeeze freshly squeezed orange juice, you can't do it on Shabbat because you're taking out something from inside something else. It's like you're removing it from its from
why
where
can
it is.
You do it on a solid and not in a liquid?
Because there you're not creating the liquid, you're not coming out with the tot'ah of the liquid, right? The liquid just gets absorbed into some solid thing. It's actually some buffalo code about it. You can squeeze it over a salad, you can't squeeze it into tea. Okay. You can't squeeze a lemon into tea, okay? Now, I think Sfaradim, we did this in Shabbat, we looked at all this stuff, I think the Sfaradim say you can for some reason. But anyway, Ashkenazim generally, Paskin, you don't. I think there's a Sfaradim talk, but I'm not sure. I don't remember 100%. But anyway, Ashkenazim say you can't because that's a tolad of dash. Nursing is the same thing. So for example, yeah, because a baby nurses just into his mouth, so it's fine. If a woman's very uncomfortable because she's, you know, very full and she needs to express, so they say you could do it like unto nothing. And as long as you don't collect it in a cup, but it's expressing for, expressing for to keep it is dafka a problem on Shabbat. There's certain times where they're machu it. Like I had a friend who was nursing a preemie, and you know it was very important that she have breast milk, and you know. But in general, to express for the sake of storing the milk for after, you can't do that on Shabbat. That's the tola of the malacha of dash. So now, what are they saying? You can't. He can do it even on Shabbat, okay? Because the assumption is when he nurses, it's a different. It's, you know, it's less of a problem of dash when it goes straight into his body. Ubi gadol asur. But if a gadol, here it's even stranger, right? If a gadol were to want to do this nursing thing, right, from a from an obed kochavim or from a behemoth may, it would be asur. Abishal omer nohagim hayushi yomkimi behemoth tahora biyom tov. That they would allow even the gadol to be yonek from a behemoth tahora on yom tov. Okay, so we're going to get into that later, but let's start with our issue. Katani mia ein choshishim biyonek sheketz. Right, so why are you not choshish for yonek sheketz? Here you see, it must be that if the kid decides to go nurse from this behema or from this Ovedet Kochavim, we're not worried because we're basically, we don't stop the kid from being, right? We don't stop him from doing things. So what do they say? No, hata mishum sakana. Here we do it only because it's sakana. If he doesn't nurse, right, assuming he's only doing this because there's no one else to nurse from, so it'll be dangerous. So they say, well, ihachi gadol nami, also danger when it comes to a gadol. So they say, no, when it comes to the danger of a gadol, gadol by umdana. If it's an issue of sakana for the gadol, we have to assess the situation. And the assumption is any katan is obviously sakana. When it comes to a gadol, we have to check. If it's Shabbat, you know, and you don't think we should do it on Shabbat, so wait and kind of assess the situation after Shabbat. Does he really need this food, right? And then decide. But don't just let him do it without checking. Does he really need it? Is the sakana real sakana? So they say, well, then katan nami li bai umdana. As if you're saying that we have to check, is it really sakana? You should do the same for katan. So Amar Rav Huna, Bereid Rav Yehoshua, stam tinok mesukane etzal chalav, which actually makes sense, right? That you didn't really need this whole runaround to basically say that a katan is in a situation where nursing is obviously a necessity for him. Whereas once you're a gadol, I don't know what they mean by gadol here and what they're talking about. Okay, right. Toddler makes more sense,
which
right?
Which isn't so unusual.
Exactly. I've seen people nursing at age 3, 4, you know, it could be something like that, where the milk isn't
necessary.
Or... They're obviously talking about here. It's not that the kid doesn't have any other food to eat. It's just the nursing, which, you know, we all know that a kid under the age of, you know, 1 basically is, or you know, 6 months, 9 months is basically most of their sustenance is coming from nursing. Okay. Now we're going to get into this statement of Abishal. Abishal omer no agima yushayon kimi behema tahora biyom tov. So they say, hey chidami, what's the case? Idi ika sakana filu b'shabbat nami. As if it's an issue of sakana, then they should allow it on Shabbat. And idi leka sakana filu b'yom tov aser. Like, why are we distinguishing between Shabbat and yom tov? It doesn't seem to make much sense. Either it's mutter because it's sakana, or it's not sakana, it should be aser. So they say, lo tricha di ika tzara, because it's a case where there's tzara. The kid really, really wants his milk, okay? Because savar, and then you have to say that Abishal holds that mifarek, which is the tolada of dash, okay, it's called mifarek, to be, take something out of something else, kilachar yadhu, okay, to do it like this, okay, because you do it with your mouth, you nurse with your mouth, it's kilachar yad, which means it's with a shinoi, it's different than the typical way of, right, the way you do it in, you know, in the fields, dash is with a kli, you know, or with your hands, or somehow, but doing it with your mouth is clearly kalachar yad.
Can I just ask a quick question? So what happens in the case of the fire? So the youngster comes and it's sakana, like it's life endangering. If he doesn't put
out... We're not talking about life endangering. Fire, if it's life endangering, then people can put out the fire. We're talking about that you're worried your house can burn down and all your possessions are going to burn down. But the not... right. Fire is a very, I don't want to get into it now because we don't have time. Fire is a very complicated situation, but they distinguish between cases where it's clear that there's life in danger and money in danger. Okay. Life in danger, for sure, anyone can do it. Okay so now, Shabbat to Isur Skila. So since it's only Durabanan, what do we say? Shabbat is more chamor than Yom Tov because Shabbat is Isur Skila and Yom Tov is Isur Lav. So Shabbat Isur Skila Gazer Rabbanan, Yom Tov Isur Lav Lo Gazer Be Rabbanan. Okay, they said since only Kal Achar Yad is only Rabbanan, we're going to forbid you to do it on Shabbat, but allow you to do it on Yom Tov. Okay, now we're going to finish up our sugya here with three cases, three brightot. Okay, I put them at the bottom of the page. three braitot that basically are going to create a koshi on Rabbi Padat and say, doesn't this seem to imply that kids are commanded against doing averot just like grown-ups? And then they're going to answer each one up the same basic way. And then we're going to have to say, well, why is there a need for each of these three braitot if they each say the same thing? Why couldn't you learn one from the other? And they're going to say, why you couldn't learn one from the other? You couldn't learn one from two of them. Okay, we're going to basically have a tzricha in that direction. Okay, so now here we start. Tashma. Lo tochlum ki sheketem. This is the pasuk about eating creepy crawling creatures. Okay, shekatzim v'remasim. You can't eat them because they're sheketem. Lo ta'achilum. Okay, so it says, lo ta'achlum, they darshin, lo ta'achilum. Okay, you can't feed them. Meaning, lahazhir gdolim alaktanim. Okay, all these psukim, by the way, the first two anyway, are psukim that appears a bunch of times in the Torah about not eating a sheketz, and the next one is about not eating dam. And they want to darshin why it's repeated again, like why you need it. It's not necessary. So they say, it means, right, they darshin lo ta'achlum as lo ta'achilum. Don't feed them to others, meaning lahazhir gdolim alaktanim. That the gdolim are musharim also to command the ktanim, okay, which is exactly our case, right? To tell the kids, don't do this. So my love, damaluhu lo tochlu, isn't it that you tell them don't eat it if you see them eating it? They say, no, that's not how you understand it. It means to lo lispulei biyadayim, meaning you can't feed them yourself. Don't put a sheketz in your hand and give it to a kid and say, eat this. Okay? But if the kid were doing it himself, again, as in support of Rabbi Padat, they're re-explaining this braita, they say, no, according to Rabbi Padat, it would mean you can't feed them with your hands, but if they're doing it, you don't have to stop them. Tashma, next source. Kol nefesh michem lo tochal dam. Again, lazhir gdolim alaktanim. Why is this statement repeated, this issue repeated? It's to say that the older kid people are commanded on the younger children. My love to amru lehu lo tochlu. Doesn't it mean lo tochlu, in which case it's against Rabbi Padat? Lo dehavu dehal delo lispuluhu biyadayim. It means don't give them blood with your hands to feed them. Tashma emor va'amarta. Here's a good case about kohanim. Okay, this is where it says to the kohanim, you can't be mitame lanefesh, and it says emor lakohanim va'amarta alehem. So why is it double lashon? Lazhir gdolim alaktanim. Okay, this is a very important halacha that you shouldn't bring a katan to a cemetery. A katan kohen. You might think, oh, a kohen, he's a katan. What's the difference? Here it teaches you kohanim, ktanim can't go to a cemetery. My love, damalu loli titamu. It doesn't it mean, oh, you can't tell him, you have to tell him, don't become tameh. Lo, and then right, or then would be against Rabbi Padat. Lo, de loli tamalu biyadayim. It means don't bring him yourself, right, and put him in a situation where he becomes tameh. Okay. So again, three sources trying to contradict him. In the end, we explain them all away. And then they say, Utsriche, why do you need all three drashot? You might have thought that shkatzim has a special chumrah that you would then say, because of this, we're going to usher the ktanim, even though other things not, because it's forbidden, even a teeny little amount of a sheketz is forbidden to eat. Like you eat a piece of a bug, you know, which is really little, it's usher. Aval dam da'ad ika revid emalo. Dam, you're only chayv if you eat a revid, okay, which is a few ounces. V'iyash me'in and dam, what if they just told you dam? Mishum di'ika karet. But they say, ah, no, because dam has karet, okay? It's isra karet, so that's obviously more chamor. Aval shratzim emalo. Then you would think, not shratzim, because it's no isra karet. V'iyash me'in and hane tarte. So what about those two and not anything else? You'd say, no, that's a problem, because what's unique about those two? Isuran shaveh b'kol, it applies to everybody. About tuma emalo, because tuma is only unique to a kohen, so maybe it wouldn't have the same thing. V'yashmuin and tuma de kohanim, shani mishum de ribabe hemitzvot yiterot. Again, you might say, so let's just say the kohanim, because eini suran shaveh b'kol, but you say, no, that's a unique halacha to kohanim, because kohanim have all sorts of extra mitzvot. So maybe that's why it's asher for a katan, but other things, no. Aval hane emalo, tzricha. And that's why you need all these cases. Okay. Now we're going to bring a case from our sugya. Okay, Tashma, our Mishnah. Shnei achim, echad pikeach ve'echad cheresh, nisuin shtei achayot pikod. Okay, so we're finally getting back to what's the relevance of this to our issue. So echad pikeach ve'echad cheresh are married to two pikod. Meiv cheresh ba'al pikachat. Okay, if the deaf one dies, ma ya'aseh pikeach ba'al pikachat. So what does the pikeach do? So what happens? We say, teitzei mishum achot isha, the wife of the cheresh was only married to Rabbanan, so she's... Right, she's already mutar lashuk. She doesn't even have to do yibamor chalitza because it's achot isha. But here's the key one. Mei pikeach baal pikachad, in the flip case, mai aseh cheresh baal pikachad, the cheresh now is supposed to do yibum with this wife of the pikeach. Now, both his wives are pikot, okay, right? The wife and the yivama, and they're sisters. So what's supposed to happen? He's only married midrabanan to his wife, right? So midrabanan is a chodisha, midoraita is chiv yibum. So motziat ishto beget, right? He divorces his wife so that he can do yibum with the other one, right? But eshet achiv asura lolam, but he can't do yibum. I'm sorry. He divorces his wife, not so he can do yibum. He divorces his wife because she's now achot zikukato. Since he's only married to Rabbanan, there is zika from the yivama. She falls to yibum to him. Now, the one who he was married to becomes achot zikukato. And the achot of a ziku, someone who's zakuk liyabein, can't stay married to you, right? So he has to divorce her. But the first one he can't marry because he was married midrabanan to her sister. So it's achot isha. So achot ishto. So, she can never get out of it. So now they say, why don't we give, right? Because nobody likes a situation where she's asura l'olam. It's a big problem. So they say, am I motziat ishto beget? Why does he have to divorce his wife? Why don't we say, teitiv gabe? Why? She should just stay married to him. Why? Because katan ochel nevelotu. Right? He's just... let him just stay beister. So what? He's a katan ochel nevel. He doesn't have dat. Let him just stay married to her. What's going to be the obvious answer here? It's a two-way street, right? It's not just him. It's her. Mishum isurat didah. She's a pikachat. Okay? So she can't stay married to him. He could stay married to her because we're not going to be mafrisha tomi isura. Because he's not a bardat. So just leave him in his ignorance, right? But she is going to do an isur. Okay, next source. Tashma. Shnei achim pikrim nisun shtei achayot. Echad pikachat ve'echad chereshet. Okay, so now two pikrim who are married to two achayot. It's not going to be the exact flip case, okay? And the same thing's going to happen, right? One pikachat, one chereshet. Mei pikeach baal acheireshet, now the chereshet falls to yibum, so obviously what's going to happen, right? Maya se pikeach baal pikachat, tekse mishum achot isha. He's married midoraita, so she's an achot isha midoraita, so she basically can't marry him. Mei pikeach baal pikachat, but what if the pikachat falls to yibum now? Okay? When the brother is married midorabanan to the chereshet. I'm glad that when I say this case is now, they're right. You're already going with them, right? It wasn't so easy in the beginning, but now they're. Maya se pikeach baal chereshet, motziat ishto beget. Okay, so now the pikeach baal chereshet, again, has to divorce his wife because it's achot zikukato. Be'eshet achiv b'chalitza. But since he's a pikeach and she's a pikachat, he can do chalitza with her, right? She's fine. He can do chalitza. Va'amai motziat ishto beget, but why does he have to divorce his wife? Teitiv gabe. Katan ochel nevelotu, right? She's a ktana, and let her just stay married. Right? So again, mishum isura didei, it's because of his problem, right? He's a pikeach, so he can't stay married to her. She could stay married to him, but he can't stay married. She's like a ktana. She's a chereshet, so she doesn't have dat. So it would be the same thing. They're equating the katan and the cheresh. Yafeh. So amarava tashma. Shnei achim, echad cheresh ve'echad pikeach, nesuin l'shtei achayot, echad pikachat ve'echad chereshet. Okay, here we have it. Pikeach is married to pikachat, and cheresh is married to chereshet. Meit cheresh baal chereshet, ma yase pikeach baal pikachat. Okay, so now, the cheresh dies, the cheresh falls to yibum, obviously, teitei mishum achot isha, right? He's married midoraita to the pikachat, so she's achot ishto. Meit pikeach baal pikacha, mayaseh cheresh baal chereshet. So what happens in this case? If the pikeach dies, so the pikacha falls to yibum, to the cheresh, who's married to his sister, the chereshet. Motziat ishto beget be'eshet achiv asura la'olam. Right? So he has to divorce his wife, and his brother's wife is forbidden forever, the pikacha. V'ha'acha de'lav isura dida ika, v'lav isura dide ika, right? Bekatane motziat ishto beget. So here you have it, right? Here's our classic case, like Donna said. Why don't you go find a case like that? And here you see that we don't just allow them to stay married. So Amar Rav Shmaya, gzera mishum hatarat yivama l'shuk. Okay, what are we worried? We're worried, we make a gzera in this case, because we're worried that people will think that you can use this kind of a system to be matur people to lashuk. Okay, look at Rashi. It says, if you allow the chereshet to stay married to the cheresh, lo yade inshe detama mishum katan ochel nevelotu. People won't know that. What will they think? Besavre kidushin dida dachula lezika de pikachat achota. They're going to think that her marriage, which was only drabanan, pushed off the achotisha of the sister. Ve'em bo'el achot zekukato. We're worried. And there's two things going on here. Number one, he has to divorce his wife. Number two, the sister can't ever get married. If we don't make him divorce his wife, then what will we assume? We'll assume that the halacha considers a cheresh cheresh at marriage good enough to pater the sister. If we let them stay married, people won't know that we're letting them stay married just because they don't know any better. We're just going to leave them in their iser status, right? We don't care if they do isurim. But then the pikachat, people will think that she can go get married to anyone she wants, but she can't because she's only a chot isha midrabana, but midaraita she's chayav in yibum and she can't. So basically, because of that, right? Remember, he can't give her chalitza because he's a cheresh, and he can't do yibum because he's married to the sister midrabana. So basically, because of that, we don't allow it. Okay. He has to give his first wife again. So that we don't get confused about the second wife and mess up the halacha. Hadron ala cheresh. Okay. Now we're done with that parak. We're now starting a new parak that goes back to the issues of aguna. Okay, we're going to have two prakim of aguna. Very interesting sugyot. Okay. Cases of aguna. So let's start. Haisha shalcha hiu bala l'medinat hayam. She goes together with her husband. Okay, here's a classic case. The woman's going to go overseas with her husband. She's going to come back without her husband, like Ruth in the Megillat Ruth. Okay, the same thing. They go abroad. They come home and they don't have husbands, right? Now, if you notice, they will believe that they didn't have husbands, right? So everyone believed them, that their husbands died. So that, right? But based on what, right? Did they have proof that their husbands died? Who knows about that story? But that's basically the case. Do you need to have proof that your husband died, or can we take your word for it? Okay? So now this goes back to what we were talking about earlier today. We have to look at other circumstances. Do you have incentive to lie, right? This is like when you
why
have a crime. So we're going to see. Why would someone lie? Okay? So, shalom beino lebeina, v'shalom ba'olam. Okay, there's going to be two parameters here. Did they have a good relationship? Okay, do we know they were fighting a lot? Maybe if they were fighting, maybe she just wants to be not, right? Maybe he won't give her a get, right? A classic case, this could happen nowadays. A woman goes away with her husband disappears because he doesn't want to give her a get, right? And she comes back to wherever and she says, listen, my husband's dead. Maybe he's just hiding away because he doesn't want to give her a get, right? Who knows, right? If we have no proof of death, we're not going to say, oh yeah, he's dead, okay? So if we know that there was no tension between them, right, obviously, there's always some tension, right? Obviously it means like no serious issues. Bish shalom ba'olam. Okay, we're going to see why is this a factor. It wasn't time of war. Okay? Uba'avam ram me'pali tinase. Okay? She comes back and she says, listen, my husband died. We believe her. Me'pali titiabem. If it were a case, right, either she can go get married to someone else, or if it were a case where they didn't have any children, then she would do yibum. Shalom beino lebeina, if there's peace between them, but milchama ba'olam, or tata beino lebeina, they didn't get along very well, vishalom ba'olam, but there was peace in the world. Ubata v'amra me'pali, right, and obviously the case if it was both, okay? Eina ne'emenet, she's not trusted, okay? We're going to see in the Gemara what this is all about. Rabbi Yehuda omer la'olam eina ne'emenet, ela imken, this is a great one, bat bocha ubegadea kru'im. Okay, it can't possibly be that a woman would, you know, lose her husband and not be looking depressed and sad. And, you know, obviously this is a tricky one because anyone could just make up that, right? It reminds me of the story in Yoshua when the people come with the moldy bread and they say, yeah. Oh, we traveled so long. And you know, we know people can do drama and make up a situation. But basically, I think it means you have to have some sense that she's mitabelet. Amru lo, achadzov, achadzov tinaseh. But they kind of reject Rabbi Yehuda. They say, no. She can get married. It doesn't, right? Whether she's crying or not crying, we allow her to get married. Okay. Tan. Shalom beino lebeina, mishum dekabai lemitne, ktata beino lebeina. What does it mean, shalom beino lebeina? Do you have to have proof that there was peace between them? Okay. Or, right? So, or the same thing. Tana shalom ba'olam, mishum dekabai lemitne, milchama ba'olam. Same thing with peace in the world. You have to prove that there was peace? No, it's just bringing that to say, not the flip case, right? In other words, they just brought it for contrast purposes, okay? They don't mean you have to prove that there was peace between them or et cetera. It's just as long as you don't know about some other thing. Amarava, my time at the milchama. What's the issue with milchama? Mishum de'amra bididami. What does that mean? We're assuming that she's going to say, I think he's dead. In other words, she sees him go out to war. There was a big battle. Everyone got killed in that thing. But it's not that she actually saw that he died. Okay? So that's the issue. We're going to see this all the time. Bididami. In other words, the point is that without conclusive evidence, we can't claim that the guy's dead. Just because there was a battle and most of the people died there, right? That's not enough to say the guy's dead. So if he's out to war, well then, we don't know for sure that she knows. When she says he's dead, she's just assuming. So, salkadatach b'chol hane di'it kilhu palit. One second. I have this line works. One second. Alright, so now they're going to say, is it olel datcha? Would you think that from the point is she thinks, this is what she's saying. She's saying, could it possibly be that he was the only one who survived? Okay? And if you're going to say, yeah, but since they had a good relationship, she's not going to stop until she really, right? A woman who loves her husband, she's going to turn over every stone until she's satisfied that he really is dead. But zimnin demachu li begiri over rumcha, v'savar shavad emet. Could be he was hit by an arrow or a sword, okay? And she thinks that he's really dead, but she didn't really check, right? Because it was a war. She wasn't going to, like, go check, go closer to his body and figure out, right? She saw from a distance that he got hit by an arrow, right? This happens in movies all the time, right? They shoot the guy, they assume he's dead, and then somehow he comes back to life, right? And then he makes it. So, ika da'avid sam tereh b'chaya. Sometimes someone could go, you know, fix him up, give him some medicine, and he could be fine. So therefore, we can't, if it's talking about a war situation, we can't rely on this. Okay?
And it also said that she can't go see it actually because she's afraid she might get killed.
Right, exactly. You're talking about a battlefield.
She's
exactly.
She's not going to go on the battlefield and, you know, exactly. She just has to exactly. Trust what people tell her.
Exactly. Okay, we're going to stop here and we'll get into, then they're going to have a whole discussion about, is a time of famine like a time of war or not like a time of war? In other words, then where does this time of war, you know, depending on what your issue is and what you think it is, would that also, you know, you might think, oh, he looks like he's dying of famine, but he might not actually die, or, you know, maybe she had to get out of there quickly because she didn't want to die of famine and she didn't wait around to see that he actually died. You know, she felt like, I've got to go get myself some food. So there's going to be some discussions, and Rav is going to say something and then say something to change his mind and change his mind again and say different things about that. That's the next part.
Do they use this as an actual source for modern day Agunot issues?
Yeah. These are basic sources about how we trust, you know, whether someone's dead or not. I mean, the big time this came up, I mean, maybe we could try to find, you know, I know there were a lot of practical tshuvas about it with 9/11. It was a huge issue about how they determined were people dead. The rabbis had a whole, you know, they had to write all these tshuvot about assuming that if we, you know, the people had died, because it was a huge issue at that time. It's happened,
like,
you know, lots of times. You can imagine Vietnam, you know, what happened then. Right, where you just have no proof of anything. And or the war this summer even, you know. I mean, here I guess we knew when people died, but right, here it happens less. But once in a while it happens.
That the rabbi used, the guy had called his wife from the towers and said goodbye. And that was the only thing.
That's interesting. Uh-huh. Right.